Blog Talk Radio.
Hey. Let's get small.
Good evening and welcome to Erie House Radio. Erie House Oldie Timey Radio, no less. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. I am accompanied by
Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we're here with
It is I, Guy the Ghoul. Blah blah to you all from Horrible Horror. The heck do
I know? Or in the AI world, it's label. Yes.
Label.
It says label, libbies on the label.
That's
label.
Right. There's a label on the libby.
You'll like it on the table. All right. That small piece of trivia comes in handy as we are getting small tonight. Or shrinking, as you will, if you will. Man, it's incredible, man.
It's incredible.
Wasn't it Steve Martin that had a comedy bit about getting small?
Yep, that was the opening, yes.
Yeah, that was that soundbite.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Ah.
From one of Steve's comedy albums of the day.
I think the album was entitled Let's Get Small, I believe.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I might have had that LP, that vinyl long playing record way back in the day.
It almost seemed like he was referencing something else when he ever said that.
I don't know of any medication that would make you feel small, but I'm not that knowing. So
it's called being married sometimes.
Yeah,
I was married.
Hey,
I never felt
Viagra.
Oh, you guys went blue again. Hello,
hey, Peter.
I didn't go there. Dale went there.
Yeah, I did. I am the guilty one.
Yeah. What's going on?
No, but we've got some diminutive yet entertaining tales for you from Dark Fantasy, The Devil and Mr. O, and Suspense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I thought the Suspense was an interesting one, didn't you, Gar?
Hang on. Let me figure out.
Somebody's scrambling for program notes.
Yeah. Okay. Devil, Mr. O, Dark Fantasy.
I like doing stuff on the fly.
Oh. Yeah. That was. I agree. That was a little.
That was an interesting story. Yeah.
It was. There wasn't a whole lot of pre-planning going on with that guy.
You're right. There was no pre-planning. Yeah.
No.
The best thing you can do when you're a scientist is experiment on yourself, right?
Right. But if you know what you're doing, you have stopgap measures, I believe they're called, to make sure that what happened to that guy doesn't happen. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And we'll find out in a few minutes. Right?
Yeah. Pretty soon we won't even have to
hear
it.
We're building the suspense, yes. I said nothing and everything at the same time.
We have just been nibbling around the edges of that, Dale. The edges.
Hey, careful now. That tickles. Good old Bob and Fogsbane join us in the chat. Oh, Fogsbane's in and out. I'll bet it's connectivity. Thanks, Blog Talk.
Yeah, but you know, all this talk about getting small, not once did we mention Marie Osmond. You know, what is this?
Marie Osmond?
Get small?
Well, yeah. She did. She went on that diet, and she got much smaller, yeah.
So,
well, yeah,
Karen
but
Carpenter.
In order for that to happen,
Too soon? Sorry.
Already? Yeah, way too soon. Yeah, we love her. Hey, what are you talking about?
She was a sweetie.
Yeah, Marie Osmond.
She was a sweetie, absolutely.
In order for Marie Osmond to get small, she had to get big first. Hello.
She wasn't big.
Yeah.
She was bigger than she was. She wasn't like a Macy's room, but You know?
Yeah, no. No, she wasn't, you know.
She was no Tony Fields.
No, no.
Tony. Tony, we miss you dearly.
Yep. Another one of those people that I saw, you know, the Merv Griffin had on a lot, you know?
Yeah.
He had these great guests that had such great stories of the old days of the golden age of Hollywood, you know? That's I guess what I like the most about Merv Griffin's show.
I thought Dale was going to say Twiggy instead of Toadie.
No. Twiggy was different.
Twiggy got any smaller, she wouldn't be she wouldn't be a stick. You know?
Yeah.
She'd be like Blade O'Grass.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully Fosbean will get back in here, but we do have a bit of radio tonight.
We do.
And shall we build up the suspense until the end of the show or knock that one out right away?
Oh, no. Let's pull the Band-Aid off of that wound. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, we already got everybody going on it. We may as well throw it out there.
Sure. I'm sufficiently suspense.
Oh, my God.
Suspense.
Okay. All right, I'm ready.
It's got an intriguing title as well. Return to Dust. We must.
Yeah. Ah, yes.
So?
That does sound interesting.
I
love the scientific aspect and notation they put in it. It sounds very recent, but it's not.
This is one of, Suspense's earlier forays into science fiction.
All right. And it was originally broadcast.
February 1st, 1959. And
episode number 788.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
Faithful listeners, and who among you is not, will remember a strange and wonderful story we presented some time ago about a member of the Beat Generation called the Tennis Shoe. It was the first radio play by a young man of whom we have expected much, and we have not been disappointed. Herewith, another strange and wonderful story by 26-year-old George Bamber. In years to come, we feel confident that we will be proud to recall that it was on Suspense that this brilliant writer was first heard. Listen then as Richard Beals stars in Return to Dust.
And now, Return to Dust, starring Mr. Richard Beals, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Testing. 1, 2, 3. Testing. Attention, Dr. Warren Vader, Department of Pathology, School of Medicine, State University. This is James Howard, Research Fellow in Pathology, speaking. At the moment, I am seated on the tape recorder that is recording this message to you. As a point of fact, by the yardstick on my desk, I stand exactly 12 inches, and I am steadily decreasing in size. I calculate if I continue to shrink at the present rate of speed, it is possible that I will become invisible to the human eye sometime before midnight. I've been trying to reach you by phone since 8 this morning, but you are not at home and have not yet arrived at your office. Since you are the only person with an adequate scientific background and technical knowledge to save me, it is imperative that my last whereabouts is known to you in the event I cannot contact you by phone. Thus the precaution of this recording. As you will have discovered by now, I have gone against your orders and pursued my theory of cancer cell growth by working in the lab at night after my regular duties. I have been trying to prove that the biochemical agent not only stops abnormal cell division, but reduces the existing cells in physical size until the neutralizer is induced. The fact that I have shrunk from 5 1/2 feet to 1 foot should be proof beyond refutation. though my condition is the result of an accident. While trying to introduce a more powerful catalyst in the laboratory last night, I inadvertently created an uncontrolled reaction which manifested itself as a white mist which filled the entire lab. The mist lasted no more than a few seconds, and as I observed no effects other than this, I continued working. When I got home, I descended into one of the deepest and blackest sleeps I have ever experienced. I woke this morning to discover myself literally lost in a sea of blankets. I had shrunk 4 feet 8 inches during the night. Naturally, my first reaction was one of panic. But I soon realized that my only salvation was to remain calm until I contacted you. You'll find a more complete report of my theory and the experiments which I've conducted to prove it in the uncompleted thesis here on my desk. This thesis, Dr. Bader, will open a door to a cure for man's worst disease, cancer. As for myself, you'll find detailed instructions on how to reverse the action which I've accidentally initiated. You'll find this on pages 79, 80, and 81. No matter how small I shall become, even microscopic, you will be able to reverse the process if you follow the instructions on those pages. Now, I had better place another telephone call to your office, Dr. Bader, while I'm still big enough to dial a phone. It is just possible that your efficient secretary forgot to tell you that I called. The phone has grown almost half as tall as I am. A strange sensation. Who would think the tensor springs on these dials would be so strong? And who would think I would have to use both hands to dial the telephone?
Pathology, Dr. Bader's office. Miss Pritchard speaking.
Miss Pritchard, has Dr. Bader come in yet?
Whom shall I say is calling?
This is James Howard, Miss Pritchard. It's urgent. It's me, all right.
I'm sorry. Dr. Bader isn't in.
Are you sure?
Yes, I am sure. Dr. Bader is not at this moment in his office.
Now, look, Miss Pritchard, don't pull that Dr. Bader isn't in stuff to me. You tell Dr. Bader I have to talk to him.
I'm sorry, Mr. Howard. Dr. Bader is not in.
Look, this is a matter of life and death.
I'll tell him when he comes in. In the meantime, is there anything I can do?
There's nothing anyone can do but Dr. Bader. He's the only man in the world that can help me.
Well, I'll tell him as soon as he comes in.
Yes, you do that, Miss Pritchard. Why, Dr. Bader? Why of all days did you have to pick today to change your routine? For the last 20 years, you've been in your office from 9 until 12. Why did you have to pick this morning to change?
Preservation is the most powerful instinct. It is now 3:30 in the afternoon, and I have shrunk to the unbelievable height of 6 inches. And I'm continuing to shrink. Yet I'm taking every precaution to guarantee that I stay alive. What have I got to live for? What am I? A 32-year-old old man that's losing his hair? Walks with a stoop from years of hunching over microscopes. What have I got to show for it? A cheap, furnished room, a meager position as a research fellow, which doesn't pay enough to live like other people. Not enough to have a wife or children. No dignity, certainly. All that I can call mine is in this room. A couple of suits, some socks with holes in them, piles of heavy books, a microscope on my desk, and a tape recorder to record my notes on. That's all that will be left of Mr. James Howard, research fellow. Oh, excuse me, Dr. Pastor. and one green and gold parakeet with the name of Pastor. To pose a hypothetical problem, Dr. Pastor, who's going to change the water in your cage if I return to dust? Certainly not Dr. Vader. He might steal what little water you had, but he wouldn't change it. Who will? If I don't contact the doctor, it may be a week before the landlady comes up here to clean. He'd starve to death. I've got to open that cage and let him loose. But how? The yardstick. I can push the latch open with that. Yes. Yes, I can just reach it. There. You're free, Dr. Pastor. You're free. The window is open across the room. There's a whole world. Fly away and make a name for yourself. The whole world. I've got the whole world ahead of me, too, if I live. After I publish my thesis, I'll be famous. I'll have everything I ever dreamed of. But not unless Dr. Vader gets the instructions. So, we resume taping. But I can't reach the start button on the recorder. These books. They're like a grand staircase to the tape deck. And now to start the machine. I'm no longer big enough to push it. Kick it. Ooh, that hurt. I've got it. Jump on it. There we go. Dr. Vader? Dr. Vader, this is James Howard recording again. I have still not received your phone call, but I have not given up hope. In the meanwhile, I have made the necessary precautions for isolating myself in the event that you do not call before tomorrow morning. I have made a ramp with a ruler to the stage of the microscope. Glued to the microscope is a transparent glass petri dish. As soon as it becomes apparent that I'm in danger of being lost from view on the desk, I will make my way to the petri dish. But what if you haven't called by the time I could be lost in the petri dish? I could prepare a slide for myself. If I diminished to the size of a one-celled organism, I would have no difficulty in crawling under the cover glass and taking up a position directly under the lens. Perhaps I should prepare a slide now. You've called, Dr. Vader! You've called at last! Thank you.
Yes, Dr. Bader, the master of science.
What the heck are you talking about?
I don't know. I don't think I'm sure I know what I just said. Just in time to pull us out of the muck and mire, CW joins us here on Erie House Radio.
Hello, I'm sorry, CW is not here, but I will definitely give them the message as soon as they arrive.
This is like Brady. Horton hears a who, but there's no Horton.
and they can't hear the who. And they can't hear the who.
First time we've been put on hold.
Oh, yes. Oh, thank you very much. That secretary, you're fired. You're fired. Get out of here and go work for that Dr. Boehner. Let him deal with you. Hello, everyone.
There you go.
CW here.
Hello, CW. Boy, boy.
Blah, blah, hello.
Hello.
Yes, I'm right here in the middle of a downtown with enough traffic to make the apocalypse look like a vacation.
There's a downtown. CW is there.
Yes. Anywhere on Earth, if there's a downtown, I'm there.
Mm-hmm. Kind of creepy, yeah. But I like that. Creepy is good.
Chicken man. He's everywhere.
So are small people. I
wanted to preface this with this was aired in 1959, and I was a little bit curious about how much information has been really jotted down by man as far as cancer. And the earliest writing for cancer goes back to circa 1600 BC. Like, wow.
Wow.
You mean they identified what it was and everything?
It described breast cancer in a Egyptian text.
Hey, that wasn't Ugg's fault.
No, that wasn't Ugg.
But
it was post Ugg.
Probably. Yeah, with all due respect to the ancient Egyptians, I bet the ancient Chinese probably had something that predated that. They had great medical skills.
I'm absolutely in agreement with you there, CW.
I wouldn't be surprised at all to learn that. But there are elements of this story that are very reminiscent to me of Incredible Shrinking Man, the movie Incredible.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but this is more on the scientific end. I mean, it's happening to a scientist who has to go through the firewall of someone who's been hired by a third-rate temp agency to be Dr. Bader's secretary.
He went against the suggestion of his mentor or doctor in residence or something. And I was like, I'm going to test this untested drug myself. And
that's what they ought to do.
Well, actually, it sounds like it was an accident in the lab the night before.
Yeah.
And
But he was dabbling in stuff that the doctor said, don't dabble in that. And he was like, I got to dabble.
Yep.
Where no man should go.
Dabble, dabble, dabble.
Yes.
Yabble, dabble.
Same thing with Henry Frankenstein. Yep.
CW.
Don't forget Dr. Jekyll. Dr. Jekyll. He dabbled in things as well.
Yep.
Dabble, dabble. CW, are you of the mindset that there is more than one cradle of civilization on this planet? I think so. I don't think Mesopotamia
is. I agree.
That is.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think. No, I mean, look at all of us. We're people who probably come from totally different backgrounds, different solar systems, and we like monsters and comics and old-time radio and sci-fi and detective hard-boiled stories and that. I mean, you're in
cool
Florida
stuff.
And you've had 10,628 jobs.
That's
I'm
right.
coming close to that mark.
There you go. It's been documented. We have no idea where Dale came from. You know, two hints, but you know.
Bazinga.
The only one not laughing is Dale. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
Oh, you're fine.
Uh-oh. Okay.
You're fine.
I think
but,
it's safe
yeah,
to say
I
that
believe...
we've all had a variety of jobs. I think it's safe to say that, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Hey, if you live long enough, I mean, come on.
That's right.
Yeah, at some point, it just becomes a job feeding yourself. So, you know, that's a different job you get.
Yeah, I'm
I
not
have
there
a,
yet.
I have something for that yeah. job, feeding myself. I use a shovel myself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
A snow shovel. Yeah, there you go.
I have my soup-eating shovel and my gruel-eating shovel. You know, because you got to have
gruel-eating
shovel.
Yeah.
Don't forget your mashed potatoes, your creamy mashed potatoes with extra creamy butter shovel.
Right. I generally try to make those shaped like the Devil's Tower in Wyoming.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah, Devil's Tower mashed potatoes. Yeah, wonderful recipe.
Yeah, it ticks off the wife, but it's fun to make. That's half the fun, but I digress.
You're living dangerously. That's what I say. But
right.
You be you.
Never a boring moment. Well, this one's kind of a short tale, so we'll be back quickly for the conclusion of
the
Turn
synopsis.
To Dust
yeah.
from
yes.
Suspense.
Yikes.
Good goat. Good goat.
Gave up when you hung up, Dr. Vader. But then I remembered a simple law of mathematics. No matter how often you divide a thing, there's still something left. So I went ahead with the preparation for my survival. And a good thing, too. It's not yet 6 o'clock and I am now only a half an inch tall. But everything is now arranged. In the center of the petri dish on the microscope stage, is a prepared slide complete with slip cover and label. Only thing lacking is the specimen. And that is me. If I become so small that I am in danger of being lost in the petri dish, I will make my way to the exact center of the slide and take up a position there. You should be able to see me for some time to come because I focused the microscope. All you have to do, Dr. Vader, is look. Just look to see me. My world is such a different place now. Books are as huge as buildings, and pencils seem like telephone poles. I wonder what my world will look like if no one ever finds me. Oh, yes, Dr. Vader. The slide under the microscope is labeled carefully. Of all the slides I've labeled in my lifetime, I hardly thought the last one might become my epitaph. Specimen, James Howard. Species, Homo sapiens. Condition, excellent. Oh, Dr. Pasteur, haven't you flown the coop yet? Is your loyalty so great that you refuse to leave so long as the last particle of me remains? Or are you hungry? What an ugly monster you are from this perspective. Your feathers are like scales of armor, infested with lice, I see. And that beak. No! No, Mr. Pasteur! No, kill me! I must back up slowly. Don't run! Slow! Back between the book I should have let him starve to death in his cage. I wonder if the tape's still recording. I can see the spool still turning. High above me, the clear plastic reflecting the last rays of the sun setting outside my window. But I can't see if there's tape. Are you there? Am I recording, Dr. Vader? This is James Howard. As soon as the bird loses interest, I'm going to make a break for it. I'll make the microscope, Dr. Vader. Don't you worry. Treat that flag, Mark James Howard, just like it was me. You understand? Even if you don't think I'm in it, if you can't bring me back, publish my thesis for me. You hear me, Dr. Vader? Publish my thesis. I can't die smaller than just unknown. I have nothing left, Dr. Vader. Not even my body. Give me my thesis. You wouldn't dare publish it in your name, Dr. Vader, would you? All you'd have to do is change the name on the title page. You wouldn't stoop that low, would you? No. No, give me my thesis, Dr. Vader. Give me that much. Can you hear me? Give me immortality, Dr. Vader. I want the world to know I live. Publish the thesis in my name. Can you hear me, Dr. Vader? Give me my
which Richard Beale starred in William N. Robeson's production of Return to Dust, written by George Bamber. Supporting Richard Beale's in Return to Dust were Paula Winslow and Lawrence Dobkin. Sound patterns by Bill James and Tom Hanley. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with Victor Jory in Death Notice. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Stay tuned for news analysis, which follows immediately on CBS Radio.
But this is Erie House Radio, so no news for you.
No news for Jerry.
No news is good news.
I was almost waiting for him to credit the story by Richard Matheson, who wrote the story that The Incredible Shrinking Man was taken from.
Ah, okay.
Does the Shrinking Man film predate this radio program?
Probably not. I think Davey said this was 1950.
1959.
Oh, really? Because Incredible Shrinking Man was very close to that. I think it was 57. Yeah. 57 or 56, maybe.
Huh. I wonder if anyone was screaming copyright infringement.
We'll never know.
No, Taylor Swift wasn't around then, so, you know, I don't think so.
Yeah. There's always ways around that. It still makes me giggle that to this day, any time you have anything to do with the Terminator franchise, you're always going to have to kowtow to say based on an idea by Harlan Ellison because he won that lawsuit.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, so Richard Matheson wrote the novel in 56 and the film is from 57.
Oh, well, there you go.
We'll never know.
But
in many ways, this was not as much... except for the fact that they were both shrinking, they're not a whole lot like the movie.
Exactly.
Well, there were other aspects to it, though, like shrinking down to nothing, which is pretty much how the movie ended. Yep.
Yeah.
Did he pop out of existence? I can't recall.
It is just before he popped out, yeah.
Yeah, at the end, he narrates and references the fact that he's going to the subatomic level.
And since they didn't have electron microscopes yet, I think that was pretty much it.
Yeah. I believe the character in this said he was going to put himself on a slide, but if they didn't have an electron microscope, maybe nobody would see him anyway.
Yep.
Just some guy.
Yeah, but that was
there.
Pretty. Yeah, that was pretty cold-hearted. Never trust academics. They are more cutthroat than the mob.
Oh, yeah. That was a crazy thing. I'm shrinking out of existence. I'm going to disappear. But I want to be immortal in the world that I'm leaving from. Who cares?
But the thing is, he didn't want the other guy to get credit for what he had learned in his research. And I know that that still goes on today. And my son was kind of messed up because a professor had taken a paper researched by several people, took everyone else's name off and published it. And now they couldn't do anything to him because of academia. But what they could do was punish the people he was mentoring, which happened to be my son. And he ended up getting pushed out of the program simply as a punishment to his boss.
Mm.
So this kind of stuff still happens today. The people will go to take whatever, you know, we think it's in stories and this and that, but it's true, and it still happens today.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and from the femme point of view, there are still a lot of scientists way back in the day who still have not gotten their proper recognition for their discoveries that were usurped by you guys.
Yep. That's true.
There's a new television program. It's about chemistry. And it's about a woman who's in the 1950s or 1960s, and she's a chemist, and she can't find her footing, so she shows up on a television program and uses her chemistry to help housewives cook food. Brie Larson is in it.
Well, and look at the writers women who had to take male names just to be able to get published at times, especially in the science fiction field.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
We
featured one of them here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. James Tiptree Jr. was, I'm ashamed to say, Allison Shelton, if I'm not mistaken. She, you did one of the radio plays, thank you kindly. And she was quite the prolific author in the sci-fi genre.
Yeah.
That's James Tiptree Jr. You'll find her book under that name.
We did at least one of her stories here, haven't we, Dave?
Yes, we have.
Absolutely. Yes.
CW, seek out this TV program called Lessons in Chemistry from this year.
Lessons in Chemistry. I'll look that up.
There you go.
There you go.
We do have, there might be something we could learn from all this.
Oh, good heavens, I almost forgot about that. Before that story leaves our minds, we'll learn something. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Give you a lever, and you can move the world, unless the lever moves you.
You
yep. Yeah, we good story about people actually shrinking. Incredible Shrinking Man was one of my very first favorite sci-fi movies. I'm sure I probably saw that on Superhost as well for the first time. But there's another very interesting story about someone very, very small.
Up and at him, it's Adamant. He's strength.
Oh, yeah.
He's Mike. He's speed. He's fight. He's adamant. That tiny ant and his atomic power has what it takes and always makes the vilest villain cower. He's rough. He's tough. And bad guys yell it up when he is up and adamant.
Ted Cassidy,
first
wasn't
appeared
it?
1965, that guy showed up.
Yeah, wasn't and that Ted Cassidy that did the theme there?
Yeah, yep.
I believe so, yeah, that does sound like it.
You mean Thurl's Craft, right? Raven Thurl's Craft?
No, that was Ted Cassidy, I think, that did that one.
Oh, that was
that
Ted
was
Cassidy?
Lurch. Yeah, that was Lurch.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, he voiced
a lot of cartoons.
He voiced a lot of cartoons.
Adamant was paired up with Secret Squirrel and Morocco Mole way back then.
Morocco Mole had kind of a Peter Lorre sound to him, didn't he?
It was, yes.
Oh, Morocco Mole, okay. That was the name of the sidekick.
Yeah.
Yep.
Why do you want the new secret?
He was his driver, yep. His driver, yep.
Yeah.
He wore a fez.
Kind of sidekick and driver.
I think he wore a fez, as I recall.
He did.
And then Mel Blanc was Secret Squirrel.
Oh.
I know that.
I like people who wear fezes. We know someone that wears a fez.
Well, and that was Paul Frees who was Morocco, I think, wasn't it?
I'll agree. I can't recall. I'd have to look that up.
I'd have to look that up.
But, yeah, it would have been. So it was Paul Frees pretending to be Peter Lorre.
I'm surprised they never did a team-up of Rocket J. Squirrel and Secret Squirrel together in one hilarious lampoon.
It would have been fun.
Morocco Mole was, in fact, voiced by Paul Frees.
There you go.
Mel Blanc and Paul Frees together. Amazing. There you go.
Mel Blanc was from Leonardo Television.
Who did Mel Blanc play on that?
He was Secret Squirrel.
They're saying Secret Squirrel was voiced by Jim Cummings.
Wrong. That's incorrect.
Let's see what we got here. Let's see what the regular wiki says.
Secret Squirrel
with a slight lift by Mel Blanc.
Mel Blanc. Yeah. Yep.
I go with Wiki on this one.
Yep. His superior Double Q was also Paul Frees, as well as his Morocco Mole.
And Yellow Pinky was voiced by Frees.
Yes.
What?
Yellow Pinky. Yep.
Yellow Pinky. He was a parody of both Auric Goldfinger from Goldfinger and Sidney Greenstreet's Casper Gutman character from the Maltese Falcon.
And there had been iterations of Secret Squirrel. Secret Squirrel in the 2000s. There were at least two different outings. Maybe three. No, he was on.
He came back in 93.
Yeah, it did. That's where your Jess Harnell and Jim Cummings came in.
That's where Jim Cummings comes in. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
And here's a funny one. He came back on a program on comedy on the Cartoon Network called Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law, where they took Birdman, the superhero from Hanna-Barbera, turned him into an attorney. And Secret Squirrel was on trial for flashing people. Every time he opened his coat, he didn't have anything under it.
Whoa.
Yeah, it went crazy. That was one hilarious cartoon. If you like the older cartoons. Yeah.
A whole lot of radio.
Sure. Yeah. Anyway.
I could use me some Arch Obler.
Yeah, well,
this is a different kind of story here. Be prepared to squirm.
Sure.
Right,
somebody's
right,
squeezing a pig. What are you doing to that pig, Gar?
That's not me. That's not me. I don't know what that is.
I'm afraid to ask.
Return to dust.
Anyway,
okay.
The Devil and Mr. O up next with a tale called The Shrinking People.
Yes.
And it was originally broadcast
March 10th, 1972, because this was a regurgitation of Arch Obler's other.
Yep.
Lights out for the devil and Mr. O.
Sounds dirty.
It is later than you think.
All right, who gave Carl that coffee?
Turn out your lights. Now, we bring you stories of the supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the mysteries of the unknown. We tell you this frankly so that if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, we urge you calmly but sincerely to turn off your radio now. This is Mr. O. Arch Obler. Have you ever stopped to consider that the plot of the husband, the wife, and the lover has been with us longer than most of us care to think? That's what our story is about tonight, but we begin after a short pause.
NAACP, NAACP. Say it either way, the initials still stand for the nation's strongest, oldest, most vital, and most respected civil rights organization. Remember, it was the NAACP which persuaded President Truman to desegregate the armed forces. NAACP persistence secured the Supreme Court decision ending segregation in public schools. NAACP engineered the historic civil rights bills of the 60s. And today, among other things, it is actually feeding thousands of indigent black folk across the nation. If we are ever to achieve a single society, the massive strength of this organization must be maintained and enlarged. Won't you join the 500,000 black and white Americans fighting for justice and equal opportunity? NAACP, NAACP. Every day it works for you. Won't you work for it? Join your local branch today.
And now, if you haven't already done so, turn off your lights now and listen to The Shrinking People.
Keep moving along. Keep moving along, ladies and gentlemen. Keep moving. There ain't no large one here. Keep moving.
Hey, officer. What's going on in the hall? What's the blooming attraction?
Read the signs, my man. Read the signs.
Huh? Oh. The great Peter Stransky, world-famous explorer, appearing in person in lecture on headhunters of the Amazon. Go, Brian.
Move along, fella. Move along.
Oh, hello, officer. Will you tell a bloke what that headhunting is referring to? Who's hunting there?
Now, look here. You're obstructing traffic. It's lecturing the man is. Lecturing on these heathen tribes that hunt their neighbor's heads. Now, move along, man. Move along, or I'll take you in.
Gentlemen, now you know the story of these strange motion pictures I have shown you this evening. For the first time in history, motion picture is taken of the lower Brazilian region. Someday soon, I hope to return to Brazil and bring back more cinematic records of the customs of these almost legendary savages, including actual specimens of heads and bodies taken and preserved in their bloodthirsty wars. When that day comes, I hope you will be as kind to me as you have been this evening. And so, good night until we meet again.
Excellent lecture, Stransky. Excellent.
Yes, it went very well indeed.
Complete sellout. That headhunting theme meant excellent publicity in all the papers, you know.
Yes, of course. Now, if you'll pardon me, my wife...
Oh, but my dear Strensky, autographs.
They paid to listen to my lecturing and see my motion pictures, not to get my autograph. I'm sorry, my wife, she will be waiting,
oh,
and I...
Oh, come, come, don't worry about her. Shields, he's well taken care of.
Eh? What are you talking about?
I just passed her backstage, and she had a handsome young gentleman having quite a tete-a-tete, don't you know?
You will pardon me.
Oh, no, John.
Oh. Oh, come now, Ellen, you must do it.
Oh, but John, that's ridiculous. Who ever heard of such a silly thing?
I did, and that's why I'm telling it to you.
Well, I won't listen to another word. I really won't.
Oh, yes, you will.
No, I won't.
If I might be so bold as to interrupt.
Oh, Peter, it's you.
I'm sorry to interrupt your most interesting conversation, my dear wife, but we must go.
But, Peter, we...
Come, I said. The automobile is waiting.
But I... Very well, Peter. Good night, John.
Good night, Ellen.
Come. Get into the car, Ellen.
Why don't you say something, Peter?
Yes. Yes, I will say something.
This.
Well, why don't you speak? Why don't you cry?
I wouldn't give you the satisfaction.
So, you save your tears for him, too. Say something.
I'm leaving you, Peter.
Leaving me? What are you talking about?
I spoke clearly enough. I'm leaving you.
Don't be a fool.
I'm trying not to be. That's why I'm leaving you. I should have done it a long time ago.
You'll go to him.
No, I'm going to divorce you first, Peter.
Divorce?
I won't have any difficulty about that, I'm sure.
No, never a divorce from me, never.
You'll have no choice. Please stop the car.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Ellen?
I'm sorry for you, Peter.
No. I'm sorry for you. And him. Come in, Ellen. Come in. And you too, young man.
What do you want of us, Peter?
It was very kind of you two to come here and join me tonight.
You said it was important, Strensky. What is...
His life. Perhaps the fault was largely mine. I was not a very good husband.
You're acting very decently about all this, Mr. Strensky. All I can say is I love Ellen very much.
And you love him, Ellen?
Yes, Peter.
If we could arrange matters quickly, I mean the divorce and all that sort of thing.
Of course. I just said we are together like civilized human beings. And now, if you will excuse me, I will close the door. The servant, you know.
He's acting surprisingly well about it all, Ellen.
I'm not so sure,
John. Oh. Now what I have to say, I say in complete privacy.
Peter, just why did you want John and me here?
I want you to waive dower rights.
Oh. Just as you wish.
Excellent. So here is the legal form as drawn up by my solicitor. I assure you, it's quite in order. You will sign first, young man.
Me?
Yes. Yes, as a witness, you understand?
Oh, very well. My pen.
No, no, no. Use this one, please. Here. Oh, I'm sorry.
John, what's the matter?
Oh, nothing. Just a scratch. The pen point.
Oh, I'm so clumsy.
John,
it's nothing, really. See, the pen point hardly broke the skin.
Yes, but it did break the skin.
Oh, yes, John. You see, a drop of blood.
It's nothing at all. Just a scratch. Unimportant.
Why did you laugh like that, Peter? What's wrong?
You feel something, John?
What?
A constriction between the eyes, perhaps?
Peter.
Or maybe a strange pounding of the heart?
Peter... Peter,
or
what
perhaps,
have you done?
John, your vision blurs. You hear strange sounds in your ears. Eh, great lover?
Peter, answer me. What have you done? John, are you all right? Tell me, are you all right?
I don't know. My head is so strange.
Tell me, have you done something to him? Have you? John, look at me, darling. Speak to me. Tell me what's the matter.
Yes.
John.
Yes, speak, John.
Eleanor.
John! Peter, help me. He's fallen. Peter, help me. Help me.
Help you?
But, John, look at him. Look at him. He's ill, dying. Doctor, get a doctor.
Not a doctor, my little wife. Doctors cannot restore even great lovers after the poison of Barakata has entered the veins.
Poison? That pen? That scratch?
Ellen, you must... So, the thought of your lover's death draws the blood from your head and you faint, eh, my little wife? When you awaken, you will wish that you... died with him.
awake again.
My arm.
You are bound in a chair. It is most discourteous of me, I know, but then, as you may remember, I always was a barbarian.
John. John.
You will keep your voice down.
John. You've got to tell me. Where is he? Why am I down here? John's not dead. He can't be dead. He's here on that table. Under the sheet. Not John.
Yes, John.
John, you've killed him. Let me loose. Let me go to him.
Stop that.
John.
Stop making that noise, you mad woman. Stop it. Stop it, I say. All right, I'll stop you then. I'll stop you. All right. There, my little boy. Scream, yell, rave all you want. This gag over your mouth serve its purpose well. Go on. Go on, you amuse me. So, now you have discovered it is useless to talk to the gag, eh, Ellen? It is such a waste of effort, is it not? So now that you are silent, I can go on with my work. Most important work. Yes, you were right about what was on this table here. See? I throw off the sheet. And he was such a handsome man. Well, I must get to work. Why, you no longer try to speak, my little Ellen. Does the sight of these beautiful surgical instruments frighten you? They need not. They're not for you. They are for John. Yes, he is dead. Dead. The poison too quickly, but you think I would let him rest in death? Oh, no. I loved you, Ellen. And as I loved you, I hate you. Watch closely. What? I'm sorry, I cannot understand you. Oh, you ask me what I'm going to do. The knives, sharp knives, you see them? No, they are not to dismember your precious John. Flesh buried, decays, and is gone. I want your dear John with me for a long time. Again, you ask the question. I'm trying so hard to explain. He's dead, and he will be dead. But in his death, he will serve a purpose. You remember I told you my savage Brazilian friends, the Yavaros, have a quaint custom of shrinking and preserving the bodies of their enemies. Well, I studied their methods most carefully. John Douglas was my enemy. Here he lies. And I will do with him as the Yavaros do with their enemies. So, now you understand. When I'm through with him, your lover will be a little leathery-skinned man, a doll-like in size, a trophy for my trophy room. Who will suspect that in that little leathery doll-like figure is the body of an Englishman? And so he will amuse me in his death. Yes. And you will sit there, my little wife. You will sit in that chair for the many days it will take me to prepare the carcass. You will sit and watch me day after day as with smoke and with heat I make the strong body of your lover smaller and smaller. You will sit there.
We leave our The Devil and Mr. O story of the shrinking people for a short message.
When you've got a family to feed, there are ways to cut high food costs. And we'd like to tell you an economical, tasty way to serve top-quality meat dishes. Today's answer is high-protein ham, H-A-M, Krakus and Atalanta imported Polish ham. When you buy Krakus or Atalanta Polish ham, there's no waste, no gristle or bone to throw away, and no water added. It's all lean, flavorful ham, down to the last tasty bit. You can even use the small amount of jellied broth to make soups more nourishing, or to create delicious gravies. And ham is also perfect for breakfast, lunch, snacks, and parties. It's the easiest food you can prepare because Polish ham is fully cooked when you buy it. So if you wish, just zip open the tin, slice, serve, and enjoy from end to end. In these days of high food prices, ham is understandably in great demand by economical housewives. So you may find that your favorite market is temporarily out of certain sizes of this fine imported Polish ham. Shipments are now on the way. Thank you for your patience.
Oh, my goodness. What a name for a ham.
Using every part of that oinker, I tell you.
Plenty of Polish hams. Plenty of Polish hams out there just couldn't find their ways to the store.
Yeah, from end to end. Yes. Use every part. I'm sorry,
From crack it.
I do recall years ago, every Sunday was a Sunday breakfast attended by the family, and we had a Polish sausage. I can't remember the name of it, but
that would be called kielbasa.
Okay, there you go.
But was there Polish ham? That's the question.
I can't say yes to that at all.
That's right, for all your Polish hams. Call Crack.
Mm-hmm. Call 1-800-PARMA. 1-800-PARMA.
1-800, yeah.
That's PARMA. 1-800-PARMA. Our most efficient secretary is standing by.
Except she doesn't know how to take an order.
Well, she can take it. She just can't write it down. You never know what you're going to get when you walk out.
Yes.
Check your bag. Check your bag.
Do Polish hams have pink flamingos in their front yard?
Only the 6 foot tall ones. Yes.
Yeah.
Or do they wear white socks over day?
I don't know. Yeah, oddly, curiously, flamingos are not native to Florida. They were imported, and I don't know why. It stuck, but it did.
They came from Parma.
They probably did, yeah.
They went down for winter and stayed, yeah.
With the Polish ham, yeah.
That's it. And the quiche.
And
the
quiche.
Yeah.
Someone told me.
Never. Never.
Yep. Sorry, guys. I'm on the road, so I'm going to go radio silent for a bit.
Okay. Please be careful.
CW will be back, and we'll give her a chance to get back by completing our tale from the devil and Mr. O. Dave, this is one of the few that I've heard before we've broadcasted. This one is a creepy one. You picked a good one. You'll find the end quite frightening.
And now back to our The Devil and Mr. O story.
Fire is warm. Hell, warm, so very warm. The air filled with smoke. Dry, swirling smoke. See how it coils around him. At first, how often you cried out when I talked like this, but now you're silent. Weeks. How many weeks has it been? 4, 5, 6? It used to take my savage friends 10 weeks to dry and cure the bodies of their enemies. 10 weeks. And I have done it in 5. Look at him. 6 foot strong and broad he was, but now a doll in size, a small brown doll. Oh, what weary days they've been, filling the body full of sand and slowly turning in the smoke and the heat, not too quickly, not too slowly, not too close to the flames. And now, the man that was John Douglas, a doll, a brown doll of death. The flames are noisy. Noisy as you are silent, little Ellen. You are... Oh, I hadn't noticed. Your eyes are closed. Wake up. Wake up! Wake up, I say. You've got to look at him. Your eyes have got to see him. You've got to see him.
Mm-hmm.
speaking. I cannot understand you. The gag, yes, I will take it off. Sitting there all these weeks, you haven't got the strength. There, that does it. Your lips are free. Well, look at him, Helen. Look at him and tell me what you think of John Douglas now. Stop, you hear? Understand? You must understand.
Smoke you away from me.
Smoke. What are you raving about?
Yes, smoke the odd curls around him.
No.
His waiting.
No, stop talking like that. Stop talking like that, I say.
He's waiting.
The knife, where is the knife? I'll stop you. No! Ellen, I... All right. Dead. Up on the table with you. Yeah. I must prepare you, Ellen, for the smoke and the fire. It took me 5 weeks with him, and now 5 more weeks with you. And then you will be as he is. Brown with the smoke of the curing fire. A little doll in size.
The Borneo and the Celebes are not the only savage tribes which indulged in this most curious pastime of collecting human heads as trophies. In my travels in far-off places, I have come across at least 20 other races who participate in this strange custom.
Let's get out of here, Mamie. What it means is dry as dust. Oh, but who cares about Ed Hunt and men and the likes of that? Let's get out of here and go to a cinema. Squash.
Oh, all right.
And they went raiding and killing their enemies, generally in nocturnal surprises. These savages severed the heads of the dead and returned with them to their villages. Members of the tribe believe their rank in the next world depends upon the number of heads secured. But, unquestionably, the most curious custom is found among the Yavaros of South America, who not only sever the heads of their enemies, but also are known to shrink the bodies of the dead until they are small, almost doll-like in size. These bodies are kept in the large huts and treasured highly. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I have a surprise for you. In my recent trip to South America and my visit to the Yavaros, at great personal risk, I was able to procure 2 of the macabre specimens. Yes, I have here in this trunk the shrunken bodies of 2 full-sized human beings. That is, at one time they were full-sized, but now they are the size of large dolls. A man and a woman, ladies and gentlemen, perfectly preserved. The only specimens of their kind in existence outside of the sultry jungles of South America. Never before have they been seen or displayed upon the lecture platform, but tonight I am going to show them to you.
And now you make your public debut, my 2 beauties, Ellen and John, the new sensation of the lecture stage.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you please, presenting 2 perfect specimens, the only ones of their kind, of the secret process which enables the savages of the jungles of South America to reduce their enemies to doll-like size. Here we have a living man, about 6 foot in size during his lifetime, now reduced to midget size. And likewise, here a woman, once a living, breathing individual like you and you and you, now this horrible trophy of the curer's art.
You see, Ellen and John, they like you. You are a success. A huge success. You're talking. You... No. No, you cannot talk. Dad, you cannot talk. No. You cannot talk. You're dead. You're both of you dead. Stop talking. Stop.
Sure, Captain, it's a strange passenger we got aboard this time, I must say.
Oh, you mean Strensky? Aye, strange he is, mate.
But what's he running away from, sir?
Sure, mate, that ain't a proper question to be asking of a man when he lays as many pound notes on the table as that man did for this passage. Get me out of England tonight, he said. And get him out of England I did.
Now, could he be one of them embezzlers?
Oh, aye, that he might. The trunk he was carrying, well, he wouldn't let any of the men lay a hand on it. He brought it down to the cabin himself.
I'd like to get a look in it.
Aye, and so would I. But he stays in that cabin of his all the time. He's down there now, and I'll bet he's looking in that trunk this very...
The cabin door is locked. No one can come in when the door is locked. It's going to stay locked until we get there. South America, they won't get me there. No one will get me there. Why did I run away? What's the matter with me? No one heard them but I. No one in that audience but I. They're in that trunk there. The two of them. Why don't I find out now if no one heard them but I? Why don't I? For sure. Yes, I must. No, they couldn't have talked, not they. The two of you lying there. You didn't talk, did you? No. No, of course you didn't. You're dead. You're more than dead. Hollow flesh shrunk by the smoke of heat until you're smoky little dolls. Alan and John, I'm free of you forever. Forever. You, Alan. Thing that was Alan. Why don't you say something? Murderer. Again, I heard you again, the two of you, I heard you.
Murderer.
No.
Murderer.
Stop it.
Murderer.
Stop it.
Murderer.
Stop it. Stop it, you little things. You can't speak. You're dead, burned in the flames. Stop it. All right, I'll stop you. I'll stop you. Into the sea. I'll throw you into the sea. Come, you and you. I've got you in my hands. I'll throw you into the sea. First, you, Alan. Into the water. There. And now you, John, into the sea. The sea will stop that tongue of yours. There. Now I'm through with you. Through with you. The water will stop your mouth. It stopped it. I'm free of you forever. The two of you forever.
Huh? What's the matter? What's the matter?
The matter? Oh, what do you mean, Captain? Nothing is the matter.
Well, I thought I saw you throw something in the water. In fact, I'm sure of it.
Oh, just some old things. Yes, that's it. Some old things I didn't want.
Oh, I see. Well, as long as everything's all right.
Yes. Everything's all right. No.
It is a weird night, isn't it?
Weird? Why do you say that, man?
Yeah, it's so dark. No moon, not a star in the sky. It's like we were sailing into the black of a tomb without even candlelight to lead us. You know, if I was a superstitious... What in the devil's name is that?
What? What are you talking about?
There, to starboard, see? Two lights. Take it, what lights are those?
They're coming closer.
Our ship lights? No, that can't be. Why, I've sailed these waters for 15 years.
It's they.
What?
The two of them, their faces. See them gleaming faces. Alan, John, get back. Back to the water I threw you in. Back.
Strensky, what's
back.
Come over you?
Back.
Stop leaning over the
back
rain. You'll fall in. You'll fall in, man.
Ah!
Look out.
Oh!
Turn overboard. Turn overboard. Turn overboard.
Help. I fell in. Help me. Here. I'm here. Save me. Save me.
Yes, I'll stay afloat. They'll save me. I won't die. I won't. They'll save me.
No, Peter.
Huh?
Take his other arm, Evan. I have his legs.
No. Let go of me. Let go.
Come, Strensky.
Join us.
No. Stop. Alan, John, the two of you, stop. You're pulling me under. Drawing me. Drawing me.
Well, I told you this would be a different lover-wife-husband situation. And let me just reassure you, if you see a doll that looks like someone else, maybe it is one of the shrinking people.
Hello, this is Angela Lansbury. Won't you jump on the bandwagon with me? This bandwagon is rolling towards a happier tomorrow. During the past year, more concerned people than ever before shared the work of Save the Children Federation. They made it possible for thousands of underprivileged children to receive help. These children did not receive alms. They and their families and communities were helped to help themselves and were given hope and a new outlook through community development, sponsorship, scholarship, and other interest programs. You too can start a child, his family, and his community on the road to productive independence. Federation programs are expanding on American Indian reservations, in Appalachia, and in many developing countries abroad. Add your name to the growing list of supporters. Contribute to Save the Children, Box 120, Grand Central Station, New York, New York, 10017. That's Save the Children, Box 120, Grand Central Station, New York, New York, 10017.
It is later than you think.
Save the children. Send them luggage so they can get out of Appalachia. Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
You don't have to know how to swim to sink.
There you go. The Tarzan yell of approval.
I'll take it.
Tarzan could swim, though.
Yeah, I think I heard the original version of this one.
And he could sing. He could do both.
Yeah, you probably did. I don't think it was called The Shrinking Man, but it was. These were kind of somewhat restored to a point that they were that crisp and clean in 72. He sold 26 of them, which means you could repeat that and have a year's worth. He didn't go back to that, though. Although two or three years later, he'd find himself writing stories and even doing some appearances in the Sears and Mutual Radio Theater.
Ooh.
Are we talking about Harlan Ellison? Who are we talking about here?
No, we're talking about Arch Obler.
Arch, our baby
Arch.
Oh,
never mind. Okay, no, I'm...
Yeah.
Never mind. Okay.
Were you creeped out, CW? Is she back?
Must not be back yet.
Not yet. She'll be back. Count on it. As we have one more shrinking tale for you.
One more shrinking violet, yes.
Right. Before that, so the deal was if you shrink down whomever, down to doll size, keep that, like gremlins, keep them away from water. Because they go back to normal size, maybe.
Yeah, because maybe they would strand back out again in water. Who knows, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, see, this is where Tony Fields comes into play again. That would be a fun one to add some water
again
to.
Again with that.
Tony Fields. I love Tony.
Gar's looking up Tony Fields now. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know who it is. Still don't know who it is. Yeah.
Her? Ruth Gordon? And Maria
Ostinskaya,
those are my hotties. That's a threesome, boy. That's,
what was the third?
Dale, I need to drive you to the eye doctor.
I know. I just hate it. You're smitten by who you're smitten by, and there's nothing else you can say about that.
Well, that's true.
Tony Fields, Ruth Gordon, and Maria Ostinskaya. Those are the three, Gar. I'll fight you for them. Those are my yells.
You can have them.
You
can have them.
I'm going to acquiesce. I will acquiesce. You can have them.
All right, fine. Good. Only I could. Yeah. to date them now, I need a shovel. Anyhow.
Anywho,
we've got one more radio program for you, Dark Fantasy. A show ahead of its time, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Kind of a science fiction horror type series.
But then, and now, older than I thought it was. When you told me what era this came from, what, 1940s, late 40s?
Yeah, early 40s. Uh-huh. Early 40s, yeah.
Now you're talking some early sci-fi.
Yes.
I've really enjoyed the science they've put into the writing of two of these. Not so much with the guy that was shrinking people with Brazilian technology.
Yeah.
I never drink water. Fish make love in it. Yeah. There you go, Bob. I do believe I shall move along to our radio program. Yes, indeed. Men Call Me Mad is the title of this one. Fantasy. And we'll give CW another segment to get on back and join us here in the studio. So this one was originally broadcast
December 19th. So what, 18 days from now in 1941?
Yep. episode number 5.
Ooh.
In the series.
Men call me mad. Dr. West, you please close the door.
Certainly, Dr. Terhune.
Now, gentlemen, I have summoned you, my two trusted and loyal friends, to divulge a secret that even I myself can hardly comprehend.
You've made a new discovery, Charles?
A discovery? Yes. I have found another world.
A what?
Another world, you say? Exactly. Will you please snap off the lights, Doctor? That switch there.
Yes, certainly.
Now, by means of this special projection machine, I'm going to show you something which will astound you beyond words. I must ask you to remain perfectly still throughout this demonstration. As the picture I'm about to show you progresses, I will explain in detail just what I have done. Now, first of all, to start the machine. Now, observe this picture I've taken on color film. A picture of the new moon. Now, you will notice that the camera has picked up a single ray of the moon. It's focused up on a wall, whereon dances a single tiny moonbeam. The camera approaches the moonbeam. Closer. Closer. Still closer. And then the special film in my camera reaches the lens. The scene changes.
Dr. Smith.
Oh, gentlemen, please. Now you see here my other world. My world within a moonbeam. Taken upon special color film of my own invention. Film that is constructed to pick up objects within the very atoms. Objects smaller, that is, than atoms themselves. And notice, please, the coloring of this other world within a moonbeam. See the hills, the plains with their red grass, their red-leafed trees. Notice that tiny stream at the left, a vivid orange. Notice the yellow of the tree trunks, the orange-colored sky, and the deep blue sun.
Amazing.
The film ends quickly now, but first a rare sight is in store for you. Now watch closely. There.
A man. But what sort of creature is that he's riding?
I don't know. You will notice the animal approaches the small stream, wades quickly through it, and vanishes from the camera's sight. And as he vanishes into the distance, the film ends.
Amazing.
Astounding. Unbelievable.
The lights, if you please, Doctor.
Oh, yes, of course.
Look here, Terhune. Is this a camera trick?
Absolutely not. I have shown you what actually exists within certain, or possibly all, moonbeams.
What's your theory, Doctor?
That all creation consists of worlds within worlds. who can say that our world is not contained within some still larger one? And that within another, and that still within another, and so on.
The thought suddenly becomes overwhelming.
Yes, doesn't it? To think that all around us, within even such tiny substances as the atoms themselves, under our feet, overhead, on all sides, are worlds of which we are unaware.
Yes, if only there were some way to visit those other worlds.
Ah, Dr. West, that is the point. We can.
Good heavens, man. You mean...
Yes, just what do you mean?
Gentlemen, I plan to enter that world in the moonbeam.
Impossible.
I don't like to say so, Charles, but aren't you overlooking the laws of dimension, the general medium, laws of nature that are so obvious?
Not only that, Terhune, but aren't you appearing a little ridiculous on the face of things?
I do not expect you to be convinced until you have seen.
Now, we in our profession are not inclined to take such things as we are speaking of for granted.
Then let's not waste words, my friends. I propose to convince you beyond all possible doubt.
Well, I have no objection to being convinced.
Nor I, though I really believe Terhune has let his imagination win the upper hand.
Now, we shall see. Now, here, gentlemen, on this table, you see what looks like an Eskimo igloo, made of crystal clear glass with an opening at one side at the base, much like an entrance to an igloo or tent.
Yes, it's about 10 inches high and about 8 inches in diameter.
Now, when we extinguish the lights here in this room, and when that curtain is drawn from the window over there, the moonbeam in question will be centered directly through that little glass case.
You want us to assist you?
Exactly.
But what do you intend to do?
Well, I have here a number of small capsules filled with a potion whose base consists mostly of radium.
What is this preparation?
A substance which will cause animal matter to decrease itself many millions of times.
In other words, you think it'll make you become smaller.
Precisely.
But small enough to enter the realm of a single atom?
I hope so.
Well, have you tried this concoction?
Only on animals. First on rabbits and rats. And just yesterday, I sent a dog into the world of atoms.
But granting such a feat is possible, don't you think your clothes would also shrink with you?
Well, I have found that any object in contact with the animal matter at the time the capsule is consumed will be caused to shrink in proportion with the animal matter itself. I found that out yesterday when I failed to remove the dog's collar.
But suppose you consume too great a quantity of the potion.
I have an equalizer, another mixture which will counteract the first capsule. By taking particular amounts of it, I can stop the reaction of the capsule, and then, having stopped it by taking another dose of the stabilizer or equalizer, I can increase my size again.
This is all very extraordinary.
I plan to be gone quite some time. I'm asking you two to watch over this little glass case for a 4-day period.
You can count on me, too.
And on me.
Good. Now I shall take a capsule. It'll begin to grow almost immediately. I've reached about 2 feet in height. I want you, Dr. Smith, to bend down to the floor and pick me up and place me on this table here, beside this little glass case, putting me directly in front of the opening or door of the case. Is that clear?
Quite, yeah.
Good. Gentlemen, my hand.
Good luck, Charles.
Smith?
We'll follow your instructions carefully, Doctor.
Good. I knew I could count on you two. Now the capsule. My head is whirring. My ears are ringing. Eyes are growing dim. I have a sensation of emptiness in the pit of my stomach. Do you notice any change in my appearance?
Good heavens. He's lost a foot in height.
Why, you're growing smaller, Terhune. You are, man. You're actually growing smaller.
He's 2 feet smaller now.
I hope I regain my eyesight before I become too small. Are my clothes diminishing, too?
Yes, yes, quite.
I cannot describe my sensations. I feel a strange weakness. My senses seem to be deserting me. I find it
rather difficult to talk.
Look, he's just about 2 feet high now, Wes.
Do as he told you, Doctor. Pick him up now. Place him on the table.
Yes, just so.
Careful now. There. Here. Put him closer to that door so he'll have no trouble finding it.
Watch your arm, Doctor. Don't cut off the moonbeam.
There. That's good.
Say, he's only about 6 inches high now.
There he goes. Into the glass case. See? The moonbeam is completely covering him. He's so tiny now, you can hardly see him. The size of a small ant.
He's faded into the light of the beam now. I wonder what he'll discover in there. I wonder what he'll discover.
At last, I'm here in another world. Such a strange place. Similar to the place I came from, yet different. Trees, yet with leaves of brilliant scarlet and yellow bark. The grass, also scarlet. An orange-colored sky overhead. A sun of dazzling blue. And the water in the little stream over there. Not blue, but orange. Yes, the colors, all different. Everything else correspondingly the same.
Why do you speak so strangely?
Oh, I beg your pardon. I thought I was alone.
You must be a foreigner. Otherwise, you'd know you're in the king's gardens, and they are quite private.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, I am a foreigner. If you'll forgive me, I'll leave at once.
Oh, no, please. It is our custom to treat foreigners in a friendly manner. And so I bid you welcome. I am the Princess Elena.
A princess?
Yes. Daughter of King Londolier. Surely you've heard of me.
No, Princess, I've not.
But surely. My father rules the world with kindness and justice. And everyone knows him for his goodness.
Princess, will it frighten you if I tell you something? Something most strange.
I think not, sir. For you yourself are most strange. Your clothing, the colors, not in the least ordinary. And your features are so different.
Princess Elena, my name is Charles Terhune. I'm a citizen of the United States of America.
America? I know the world quite well, but never have I heard of America.
That is why I fear I might frighten you, Your Highness. You see, America is not in this world. It is in another.
You're from another world?
Exactly. You see, I am a scientist in my own universe. I discovered your world here, so I found a way to come to visit you. Why, you don't seem at all surprised.
No. Why should I be surprised? We've expected you for a long time.
Me?
Well, not you exactly, but someone.
What do you mean?
Our scientists have known for many years that other worlds besides ours exist. But they've never been able to discover a method of entering one of them. We've been hoping someone from beyond would find a way here.
Amazing.
That is why I asked if you were a foreigner. Since my father rules the entire world, naturally a foreigner could only be from another world.
This absolutely astounds me. Princess, I must speak to your scientists. Well, this is so wonderful. The people of our world seem much alike, save in a few minor respects. We look alike, talk alike.
We've often wondered how much we would be like the people from beyond.
Take me to your scientists, Princess. I must see them.
I'll gladly take you to them. But first, I must warn you. You're in great danger.
Danger?
Our world is doomed. We're falling victims to a strange malady which none of our doctors or learned men can overcome. It is slaying our people by the thousands.
A plague?
Yes. A mysterious disease. One we've never encountered before in all history. If you would save yourself, use whatever method you have and return to your own world before it's too late.
One moment. Princess, Will you take me to your father? I don't know why I say this, but perhaps I can help.
Oh, no. No, save yourself. I beg of you. Do not remain here to perish.
Please, Princess. At least allow me to try to help.
You're either very brave or very foolish.
Brave or foolish, take me to your father.
Very well. But he will only warn you, as I have done.
Ooh. Consider yourself warned, dude.
It's really good for getting that small, man.
Yep.
Definitely a Horton Hears the Who story, yeah.
Buffalo lumps and woozles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That'll be very confusing. Yeah.
Wow. Given the opportunity to shrink myself down to explore another universe, in science fiction writing and even comic books, there have been protagonists who their ability and power was they could shrink themselves down. Never thought of them as a superhero, like Ant-Man and what was the other guy, the Atom. You know, it's like, kind of like Aquaman for me.
I'm 2 inches tall. What shall I do? Oh, I can become a superhero. Yeah.
Right.
They gave
the Atom a caveat in the fact that he has a control on his belt buckle that he can manipulate so that he gets really tiny, but he's got the impact of a man 180 pounds. So if you take 180 pounds and you knock it down to, say, the size of a marble and someone hits you upside the head with it, blah, blah, you're out. but I don't know.
And how do we know this?
I like Batman.
Years of research.
That's right. I like Batman. Although Batman has worked with the Atom before, but, you know.
Yeah. He doesn't put it on his
resume,
though.
Yes, I like Batman, too. I'm a huge fan of the Bat.
I was thinking about it today, and I don't know why. But when you're a kid, it's simple. You have a protagonist. And they go through whatever trials they do, and they come out the other side, and they're the winner. Whether it's cowboys and Indians, and you're an Indian, and you overcome, or you're a cowboy, and you overcome, or you're a superhero, and you overcome, it's very simple. And in a lot of the reading today, it's very complicated.
And today, nobody really overcomes, so we're all stuck where we are.
Yep.
That's true. But it gives you more reason to pull your audience in. It was the same thing when they did the serial. You know, your hero or your heroine was on the cliff.
Oh, yeah.
The cliff was collapsing. Tune in next week, folks.
Next week, that's right. Yeah. You only had one TV show to do that. You were saying, Dale?
Oh, no. It's always when they came back from the serial, something like totally impossible happened. Well, he didn't really go over the cliff. He leapt out of the car just in time when you didn't see it.
Right.
That's why
exactly.
That's why it's important to see all camera angles.
Yes.
Absolutely.
No, and not all serials did that, but some of them were kind of notorious for that.
And when they did fall off the cliff, or when the ledge finally caved and gave way, there was this handy dandy branch that was growing outside of the side of the mountain that was strong enough just to hold them as they conveniently grabbed onto it when they were falling.
Yep.
CW. Are you familiar with the Panther Girl of the Congo 1955 serial?
I've heard of it. The serial that I was referring to was another one in the jungle. It was called Nyoka, if you're familiar with that one.
Yes.
Yeah,
the Panther Girl of the Congo had this cliffhanger serial where there's two groups of people. They're both in boats. On the water in Africa or wherever, on the Congo. And they're shooting at her. And I always make a joke that she had a bulletproof butt because apparently the shots were hitting the back of the boat, but not her. And the way it looks, it's like they could be ricocheting off her backside. I was like, what's going on?
That would be good. You wouldn't want to get it in the end, man. You wouldn't want to get it in the end. No.
Yeah, I'll give it to you.
Baby's got back. Baby's got back.
How do I not have my boinkers? I don't have my boinkers. Because it's going to
get Sir Mix-a-Lot knew. Sir Mix-a-Lot was on the job
when he wrote that.
Yes, I think so.
yeah. And it was Frollo's cousin. She was very demure. She wasn't a very big person. But just the way that her outfit worked out, bulletproof butt.
Well, I'm surprised. I mean, in the Perils of Nioka, at least they had her dressed more sensibly. I mean, she had safari shorts on and a decent pair of hiking boots. I'm surprised they didn't try and put her in high heels and a dress going through the jungle.
That's one of those comics that are actually in public domain.
Yes.
Nioka?
Nioka.
I can't spell her name right.
Really?
N-Y,
I think, isn't it? N-Y-O-K-A, isn't it? Nioka?
Why do I not know this?
Oh, there it is. Perils of 1942. Kay Aldridge. And Clayton Moore. Clayton Moore actually played bad guys in a lot of the earlier stuff.
Until they
got the Lone Ranger shtick.
I meant the actual comic book is in public domain, not the... Well, the serial maybe as well, yeah.
1942.
The serial is in public domain, if I'm not mistaken. Yep, it's all over YouTube.
Yeah, well, and Brian Pixler has kind of put those up and put voice on them, and Al Klosh and I have done several voices for his renditions of Nioka stories.
Is he still doing Superhero 101?
Yes.
To the best of my knowledge, he is still doing that, yeah.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Mm.
He's got superhero women that host the serials. It's called Superhero 101.
Wow.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he used to contribute to Erie House TV, and we would show those.
Cool. Well, it's nice to have some comics that had your female hero who at least, you know, wasn't fighting crime. First, let me fix my hair and redo my lipstick and powder my nose and then put on my new high heels and then I'll run for it.
I just saw an advert for this thing that you put on the bottom of your shoes, and it's got spikes on it. So it spikes, and it's a rubber device that comes up and holds onto your shoes. For the problem we're having right now, it's icy, wintry. You could slip and fall. So this thing is like a little thing you add to your foot, your shoe, and you have cleats. You have some type of thing to grab onto that. And they showed it, and someone was using it wearing high heels. Why are you walking on ice in high heels? Why? What?
I don't
know. They showed the cleat product on high heels.
I, for one, am impressed. We are running out of time. So let's get back to Dark Fantasy and wrap up. Men, call me mad. Mad about. I'm just mad about Harry.
Let your majesty is how I found your world and the way to enter it.
It's interesting. At one time I would have said amazing. But with our discoveries of other worlds around us, it's now only interesting.
I've warned Dr. Terhune to return to his own universe before he falls victim to the plague.
Yes, Mason, you must.
But I would like to help. I'm a doctor where I came from. Perhaps I could do something.
I fear it is useless. Our most brilliant physicians are powerless to even make a diagnosis. Much less a cure.
But I have a knowledge from another world, Your Majesty.
That's true, Father. He found a way of reaching us, while we here have been unable to reach the other places beyond.
Yes, daughter. You reason wisely.
Please, Your Majesty, permit me to see some of the victims. I can't return home until I've at least made an attempt to help you.
Very well. As you wish. Come with me. My son lies dying in a room above. I will permit you to examine him. Well, Dr. Terhune?
Your Majesty.
Dr. Terhune.
Heavens, man, this is typhoid.
Typhoid?
But what is typhoid?
We have it on our Earth.
Well, tell us, do you know the cure?
Yes, Your Majesty, I do. Take me to your nearest medical laboratory. We must prepare a serum, huge quantities of it. We must send it to all parts of the world immediately if we're to save your people.
Daughter, these reports from all parts of the universe. The deaths grow fewer and fewer each day.
It's a miracle, Father. And Charles Terhune has saved us all. There have been no typhoid deaths now for 3 days.
I know. Our fight has been won.
The people are clamoring for you, Dr. Terhune. They almost consider you a god.
I am no god, Princess. Merely a man with a little knowledge.
But you came to us like a miracle man, in time to work the greatest wonder of all history.
I'm happy that my journey here has been for a purpose.
Anything you ever wish in the world will be yours.
I know, Elena. There is so little I want, yet so much.
Will you remain here with us forever?
I cannot, Princess.
You called me Elena a moment ago.
I cannot, Elena. I must return to tell my people what I've discovered.
Oh, but if you go now...
Yes, Elena.
Oh, why must we always be governed by rules of propriety?
Elena, if you're thinking what I hope you are...
Charles?
Elena, my darling. Is it wrong to say I love you?
Charles, is it wrong for stars to shine or for flowers to bloom?
Oh, my darling princess.
Charles.
I love you, Elena.
And I love you. Please, don't leave me, my darling.
Just for a little while. I will return to you, Elena. I promise.
And I will wait for you, beloved. And when you return, nothing in this world or any other will ever take us apart.
Past his time, almost 4 days.
Look, a moment there in the moonbeam, see?
No, I...
Yes, look.
He is coming back. See, there he is, out of the glass case on the tabletop.
He's growing rapidly, West. You better place him down on the floor.
There. Look, larger and larger.
This is perfectly astounding, man. I wonder what his adventures have been.
Dr. Terhune... Can you hear me, Dr. Terhune?
He's almost 4 feet tall now.
Can you hear me, Doctor?
Water. Some water, please. Water, Wesley. Wes, quickly. Over there in that goblet.
Yes, just one moment. Here we are.
He's all right now. Full size again. Here, Terhune. Drink this.
Yes. Thanks.
Oh, that's better.
Are you all right, Terhune?
Yes, quite all right, thank you. Gentlemen, I have had the strangest experience imaginable. I have visited a world that's amazing and wonderful.
Tell us about it.
Yes, I will. When I became small enough to enter the moonbeam, I found myself in the exact spot you two saw in the picture I displayed for you. I did not know which way to go, naturally. But after a moment, I heard someone speak. And that, my friends, is precisely what happened to me.
And you say those people knew all about the existence of other worlds, but were not familiar with such a disease as typhoid.
Exactly.
You must have been somewhat of a hero, didn't you?
Yes, somewhat.
You know, if I hadn't seen this demonstration with my own eyes, I'd never have believed it.
Well, Dr. West, even though I was the one who experienced it, I'm still wondering if it actually happened.
Then it happened all right. Yes, we saw you grow small right before our eyes. So small, you became almost invisible. and disappeared in the moonbeam.
I trust you two will confirm any statements I might make to the public about all this.
No, absolutely.
Certainly, Tejun.
By the way, was my sister here during my absence?
Why, yes, she was. She acted very strangely, too, but we told her nothing.
Well, gentlemen, perhaps I should have told you this before. You see, my sister and I jointly own several hundred acres of valuable oil land in the south. She's a greedy woman. She's tried for years to obtain full possession of the property. She's tried many ways, but her latest method is by charging that I'm insane.
No, well, that's ridiculous.
Yes, exactly. But she's preferred the charges. Tomorrow at 9, I must appear before a group of alienists who will decide whether or not I'm mentally unbalanced. That is why I had to make my experiment before tomorrow.
Dr. Terhune, you've been carefully examined by this impartial and experienced board of alienists at the request of your sister. It's our decision that you must submit yourself to a series of treatments at whatever sanitarium your sister might choose.
No, no, stop. This has all been so irregular, so unfair. You think I'm mad. Well, the story I've told you is true. I can prove everything I've said.
Please, Dr. Terhune.
My two friends, Dr. West and Dr. Smith. Ask them. Why haven't you let them testify for me? They saw it. They'll tell you everything I've said is true.
One moment. Yes? Oh. Yes, he's here with me now. I see. Yes, all right. I'll tell him. I'm sorry, Dr. Terhune. I'm afraid I have bad news for you. Doctors West and Smith were to have testified in your behalf. But I've just received word that they were both killed a few moments ago in an automobile accident.
And that was the verdict. Now men call me mad. So they've locked me here in a cell till the time they can remove me to a sanitarium. Any moment now they'll come for me, whisk me off through the night. My discovery will never be proved. People will laugh for a while. Speak of the mad Dr. Terhune. And then they will forget. And for me, no escape.
Charles. Charles, my darling.
Elena. No escape. No escape. Oh, what a stupid fool I am. The moonbeam, of course. The moonbeam.
Men Call Me Mad, an original tale of dark fantasy by Scott Bishop. Ben Morris was heard as Dr. Charles Terhune. Eleanor Naylor Corrin was Princess Elena. Fred Wayne was King Londolier. Murillo Schofield was Dr. West. Muir Height was Dr. Smith. And Daryl McAllister was the specialist. Next Friday night at the same time, the National Broadcasting Company will present another tale of dark fantasy, The House of Bread. A strange and compelling drama of Christmas 1941 and that first Christmas nearly 2,000 years ago told to you by Scott Bishop. Dark Fantasy originates in the studios of station WKY in Oklahoma City. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's right. That deserves a boing. as we wrap up Dark Fantasy. I thought Jonathan Harris was Dr. Smith. What do I know? Let's see. Time
that would be
for,
in the future.
Time enough for another morale. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
A little knowledge goes a long way until you try to fill out the new tax forms.
Yes, it was all about dreams.
It was. But tomorrow we'll be dreaming about more small stuff with Sears Radio Theater. Then there were none. And no, that, I don't think it's an Agatha Christie story at all.
Not the Agatha Christie.
No. So we're getting even smaller tomorrow. Didn't the Hulk in at some point he went into a subatomic world?
He did. In the 60s.
Yeah, and there were in the 70s, maybe. And there were green people. He fell in love with a green girl or something.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And then it got modified to something different later, but there was a point in time where he got small for a big guy.
Yep.
He stayed big, but he got small. Figure that out.
I don't know. And Attack of the Puppet People, another good shrinking people movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that one's a little bit weird.
Wow.
That was a little bizarre.
So, CW, did you make it back?
I'm back.
Huzzah, huzzah. Just in time for tonight. Almost.
Yes, another tale that shows how greedy people are. His own sister had him locked up. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Pretty cold-blooded. Well, that's tomorrow night at 6:30. Again, Sears Radio Theater followed at 8 o'clock by...
All of the horrors, I mean, guys, they go along the Twitches.
Yes. I've heard of that guy before.
Twins.
Yeah, so have I. Hmm.
Every time I go to Bedrock, Twitch. Sorry.
Twitch.
I keep every...
See.
I always think of
CW. Have you ever actually watched one of the episodes? Horrible Horror.
As a matter of fact, I had. When you were getting all that difficulty with your internet provider, I saw the encore performances.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah, I usually have to. Sadly, I have to go to work all the time.
Yep.
So, but. Yeah, I go on Twitch from time to time.
Okay. I didn't know if you had ever seen any of the weird stuff that I put together. Try to keep it fun.
Oh, yeah.
Watch those four-letter words. Pretty soon, in a couple of years, Dave and I, that'll be a thing of the past.
Yeah. How is it I'm the young guy, but I'm out of work?
All right. Well, you won't be tomorrow night. We'll see you at 6:30 Eastern, right here.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
I'm here this night. I'm back.
Don't come alone.
Thanks again. Good old Bob and Fuzz, babe.
Dig it.
And everybody else.
Somebody should stop tickling Vince. Yeah.
Good old Vince.
Whole bunch of getting small.
Oh, yeah.
Small. Oh, and how did we forget Fantastic Voyage?
Oh, yeah. Now,
there's a good getting small
movie.
Oh,
my gosh. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
With Raquel Welch, Donald Pleasance.
Right.
Yeah.
I never wanted to shrink Raquel Welch.
No,
I know. What were they thinking?
Honestly, yeah, Dave, shame on you. She was my first crush. I think it was from 1 million BC.
Oh, yeah.
I was an early Harryhausen buff, and then once I saw her in that and Fantastic Voyage, I'm like, oh, yeah. That's my girl. And Stephen Boyd was Grant in that movie. Donald Pleasance. Edmund O'Brien was in it. Art O'Connell was in it. Arthur Kennedy.
Yes, and that was based on a story by Dr. Isaac Asimov. It was novelized by Dr. Isaac Asimov.
A very young James Brolin was in it.
Oh, wow.
As was Star Trek's James Doohan. He was a hypothermia technician.
I've got to rewatch that movie. I don't remember James Doohan in there.
Small role, probably James in the Doohan. Operating room. Probably in the operating room.
Doohan was also in the Satan Bug, but he wasn't. He didn't get credit until much later. But he was in there.
Yes, I remember seeing him in that. You have Richard Basehart in that movie as well.
Ah. Admiral, what was his name? Admiral what?
That's really strange. Richard Basehart and William Shatner were very classically trained actors, and both ended up making more of a name in the sci-fi genre than anything else.
And on television.
Yes.
Rather than the silver screen, it was more the...
silver screen or trotting the boards on Broadway and the West End in England and all that sort of thing.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Let's see. Oh, how about the miniature people in that Dr. Pretorius had in Bride of Frankenstein? Remember those? The ones he had in the glass chairs?
Yeah. I don't know what that was about.
Yeah, now that you mentioned that was awfully creepy.
What about Dr. Cyclops? That was kind of weird, too.
There you go. There's another one. Dr. Cyclops.
Yeah. But the one you mentioned earlier, the puppet people, that was getting onto the realm of kind of weird and freaky. What in the holy guacamole?
Yep.
What in the... Are you?
3 and 4 letter words I hear bubbling in the background, but
found a book of musical notation of 120 plus classical favorites for what? Keyboard, guitar, and banjo. Oh, okay. I just opened a box that I haven't seen in years. It shows my law back diploma so that I can teach people to read. That's crazy. Oh, my gosh. Wow. I have found a plethora of fun things in a box.
A plethora. That's performing. More than two, isn't it? Isn't a plethora more than
it
two,
is.
Though, right?
More than two,
it
yeah.
is more than
yeah.
two, right. less than that's... 10. No, I don't know about the less than 10. It just sounds good. more than two, less than 10. Plethora. Use it every day. What is this? Wow. This is college stuff here. Oh, my goodness. Wow. College. Does anyone remember that? It's been a while.
Sadly, yes. It's something that I've got 4 more credits I've got to clear.
Yeah, I have enough for a bachelor's, but I've got an associate's. I never got the big B degree that I wanted. But it doesn't matter now because I'm functionally unemployable. It doesn't matter.
I couldn't be prouder.
I feel so good now. I feel validated by your pride in me.
Well, you probably could still. Why don't you just opt to get it just to have that? Say, yeah, I've got a big B. Bachelor's.
A big B.
Yay me.
Yeah.
Big B.
I don't even know how I'd go about it. It wouldn't be a whole lot of credits, but what was it? I had a problem about 2 months ago. I was telling Dave about it, and I called my college and said, yeah, I have this question. I need to talk to somebody. Like, we'll give you the answer for $9,000. I'm like, what? Like, yeah, you just need to sign up to these classes, and we'll tell you all about it. I'm like,
Yeah, I was thinking about Kent State University, but it felt so much like a cult. I'm like, yeah, no, I can't do this.
Well,
actually, you could probably do, because you're both vets, right? You have that military thing going for you.
I do. I don't know if the other guys do.
I did not have enough time in active duty in the National Guard to get the I mean, while I was in, I could get it for free. Absolutely.
Right.
But even then, I'm like, you know what? I can't even do this for free. These people are crazy.
Yeah. I took
the
advantage
people
of
that you're
GI
probably talking to, the people you're probably talking to will do anything for a buck. There are probably ways, if you went through the Veterans Administration, people who could guide you where you could either get it for a substantially less amount of money if you really want to do it.
Yeah.
Or probably get it for next to nothing at all. You may still be under a certain parameter. They've got so many rules and regulations that are just dormant that they're just betting on people not having the wherewithal to look them up.
Right.
Yeah, I'm probably one of those.
Yeah. Here's something that's kind of humorous. So let's say 10 years ago, I boxed up some stuff and I put it on a top shelf. And now, 10 years later, they're too heavy for me to lift up. What happened?
Yeah.
Well, do what Fibber McGee and Molly. Just let it all come cascading down and then show it back up there again.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm going to slowly redistribute what I got going on. It'll work out, but it takes a little bit longer than it did to just put a box up there. I picked up this one box. Like,
with that being said, gentlemen, I must be away. I must be away. So if you wish, I can perform the final task of the evening.
I got an antsy collie up there, so I'm going to go see what he's fussing about as we...
Okay, hopping up and down on all four legs. With that being said, Mr. Durante, please take it away.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say...
Hasta luego, whatever you are.
What more is this say but good night?
Silly day.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for two to lose.
A for the sting.
Sorry for what we the same, and it could think it do. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Ah, 'tis my cue. Exit, stage left.